Well, good morning, Covenant Church. It is truly, truly, truly great to be here amongst people. I don't know about the rest of you, but I have found this third wave of COVID to be somewhat of a challenge. Spending most of my time alone and living life through Zoom on a screen, it has long lost its allure. About a month ago, I recognized that I was feeling a little bit off. You know, as Mother's Day approached, I started feeling this heaviness, this sense of foreboding. And I managed to convince myself that all five of my children were going to forget me on Mother's Day. That I was going to be overlooked, there would be no gifts, no visit, that I was just going to be a bench player in the celebration of Mother's Day. My thinking was totally irrational. All five of them came through, I'm happy to report. But when I was mired in that distorted thinking, I felt invisible. You know, not just to people, but I also felt invisible to God. I concluded that, well, God doesn't care about me either. I mean, if he cared about me, then why was I alone? If he knew I was lonely, then why wasn't he doing something to remedy it? Did God even see me, I asked? I don't know if you can relate to any of this. Have you ever felt overlooked, like you were on the periphery of life, looking in? Wondering if anybody sees you. Wondering if God even sees you. Well, luckily, the Bible has lots to say to people who feel that way. I've chosen one particular story from the New Testament that spoke to me, and I hope it speaks to you too. You likely know this story forwards and backwards and sideways. There's so much that has already been preached about it, but I'm going to ask you to bear with me as we take another look at it today and focus on one or two particular aspects of the story. It's the story of Zacchaeus, and it's from Luke 19, verses 1 to 10, and I'm going to read them. Here's what Luke says. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." So I'd like to look at two key characters from this story. First of all, Zacchaeus. We see Zacchaeus in this story defined, first of all, by his profession. He's a tax collector. And then he's defined by his social status. He's wealthy. And then he's defined by a physical trait of his. He's short, the wee little man, right? And we can assume that his social circle is probably pretty small, judging from the reaction of the crowd when Jesus invites himself to Zacchaeus' house. They mutter, you know, they call him a sinner. One of those dirty, rotten, crooked tax collectors, like they've written him off. Zacchaeus is an outsider. He wants to participate in what's going on in the community. Like Jesus is passing by, a crowd is gathering, he's curious, and he wants to see who Jesus is. But he's forced to the fringes unable to be part of the action. Literally and figuratively, he's up a tree. I don't know about you, but I identify with Zacchaeus. You know, I define myself by my profession, even if I'm retired. I'm a retired pastor. I define myself by my social status. I'm a single woman living on a pension. And I define myself by my physical stature. I'm a little old lady, you know. And thank you, Vera. And since the start of the pandemic, my social circle has been severely restricted, like many of you, I assume. Now, I am an introvert, and I enjoy my own company, and I am okay living alone. And I've managed quite well for the most part. However, I have come to recognize that when I spend too much time alone, without contact with other human beings, I get in my head, you know? And I can go a bit squirrely, and I go down the path of feeling like life is going on all around me. I'm up a tree, looking down at the action, invisible and expendable. And sometimes I do feel on the periphery of life, wondering, you know, why am I alone again? Wondering if I can afford to do things, if I'm physically capable of doing things. Like I'm watching life from a distance, wondering if I matter, just hoping to hear somebody call my name. I am Zacchaeus. What about you? Do you identify at all with Zacchaeus? Ever felt like you were up a tree? The Bible tells us that Zacchaeus wants to see who Jesus is. So he runs ahead, he climbs a sycamore tree, and he waits for Jesus to pass by. Now Jesus, at this point, he's a man on a mission, right? He's on his way to Jerusalem for the very last time. That's where he'll be arrested, crucified, and ultimately rise from the dead. So you could say that he's engaged in some pretty important stuff. He's got a lot more important stuff on his plate than you or I have. There are so many demands on Jesus' time and attention. And a crowd has gathered to see him here in Jericho, even as he is just passing through, the text tells us, without any intention of lingering. But when Jesus reaches the spot where Zacchaeus is perched in the tree, you know, out of sight, just observing, Jesus stops. He's busy, but he's not rushed. He takes the time to look up, and there in a tree, he sees a man. And in spite of there being a crowd, Jesus sees this individual person, and wonder of wonders, he calls his name. Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. And we aren't told directly how it is that Jesus knows Zacchaeus' name, or how he knew that he's up in that tree. But this isn't the first time, is it, that Jesus demonstrates his supernatural abilities, this omniscience. It's not the first time that we see Jesus seeing people as individuals rather than just as part of a mass of humanity. It's not the first time that he's known a person's story without being told. Well, take, for instance, the Samaritan woman at the well. He knew that she'd had five husbands, that the man she was currently living with was not her husband. Take when he told Nathanael that he had seen him under the fig tree in John 1. Or the day when the crowd was pressing in on him, and yet he focused in on that one woman who needed healing. Or how he knew what awaited him in Jerusalem, how he knew what people were thinking. This ability to see people as individuals and to know their heart is just one of the attributes of God that we see in Jesus. You know, again and again in the Old Testament, God tells us of how he knows intimately each person that he has created. Psalm 139 famously says, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise and when I'm perched in a tree. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." Or Isaiah 43, this is what the Lord says. "He who created you, Jacob, he who formed you, Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have summoned you by name. You are mine." And Isaiah 49, "Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands." God called Moses by name. He called Hagar by name, Samuel, Jacob, Elijah, Abraham. In the story that we are looking at today, Jesus sees Zacchaeus. He doesn't see his profession or his social status. He doesn't see his physical traits. He sees a precious person with a name and with value. So, if God has shown himself to be a personal, intimate God who knows and cares about people in the Bible, then I believe that he knows and cares about me and you too. He knows my name and your name and our nicknames. He knows what we need, what we're going through, what's going on in our lives. He knows our stories. Now, how does that sit with you? Have you embraced this principle? Are you able to? If I'm honest, I sometimes find it difficult, especially when I'm lonely or feeling sorry for myself or when some hardship or another comes my way. I've had to sit with this story and everything that I have just said to you and all its significance. I've had to ponder it and chew on it. I've had to wonder, what about those 215 children who died at the residential school in Kamloops? Did God see them? Does he know each of their names? Does he care about them? As sad and terribly disturbing as it is to acknowledge what those 215 children went through, I believe that God does know their names. God does care about them, and that he is just as horrified as we are. In spite of all the tragedy and misery and cruelty in the world, pause. Take this off. Turn off? Okay, so in spite of all the tragedy and the cruelty in the world, and in spite of how people mistreat one another, in spite of our confusion and our inability to grasp what God is up to when bad things happen to innocent people, I've had to decide by faith, to decide to believe that God is good. That he sees me and he knows me and that he cares, even when I don't feel it. Because my feelings change, right? My feelings go up and down and come and go, according to how much I've slept or what the weather's like or who's been nice to me that day. My feelings are not a reliable gauge of reality. Sometimes I just have to choose to believe, to hold on for dear life. And sometimes I have to follow in Zacchaeus' footsteps, because look what he does. Look at what Zacchaeus does after Jesus calls him down, after the crowd has muttered and complained about Jesus going to the home of a sinner. Zacchaeus stands up, says,
Now, he's just come down from a tree, so we can assume he's already standing, but there's a change in his posture. He stands up, or literally, he stands his ground. He takes a stand, if you will. And he refuses to accept the crowd's muttering about him, or defining him by the sinner moniker. After Jesus acknowledges him, he stands up and challenges the old labels that had defined him. And he promises to right the wrongs that he's committed. He acknowledges what he's done. Here and now, I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount, he says. Now that's what I have to do when I let my feelings undermine my faith in God's love and care for me, in his care and concern for all of humanity. I have to stand up against my feelings, challenge them. Take a stand against the doubt and stand firm in my faith. But there's something else of significance going on here that needs to be addressed. And that's the power of being seen. Look at how Zacchaeus responds when Jesus sees him. Verse 6 says, he comes down at once and he welcomes Jesus gladly. Now I detect this eagerness, this enthusiasm, perhaps even like a sense of relief, like somebody invited me. Zacchaeus moves from the periphery into the center of the action. Now, have you ever felt that kind of sense of relief when, oh, I got invited, yeah. I like to think that it's by virtue of Jesus' paying him attention, greeting him, that Zacchaeus is motivated to take this step of making amends. That simple but oh so powerful act of Jesus looking up and acknowledging him, this awakens something in Zacchaeus. It changes him. It helps him to draw on a potential for good that's in himself, and it sparks a new direction. It's life-changing for him. I would love to know the rest of his story. I've experienced this power of being seen. You know, I doubt I ever would have gone down the road of becoming a pastor if there weren't a few key people that had not taken the time to see me and acknowledge me and verbalize to me some potential that they saw in me. That validation was life-changing. Can you think of a time when you were motivated to stand up, rise to your full stature, because someone had taken the time to see you? It's powerful. And isn't this something that we can all do? Acknowledge other people, see them, validate them. Who knows what a simple greeting or a gesture of kindness or some words of encouragement might inspire? It's certainly a way for us to imitate Christ. So I'd like to suggest two takeaways from Zacchaeus' story. The first is be like Jesus to people around you. See people. Even look for people sitting up in their figurative trees. People on the periphery or people who may be feeling overlooked. People you may just pass by usually. People with hidden potential waiting for someone to call it out of them with a simple act, a few words of validation. Now, to fully emulate the way Jesus functioned, that might mean having to slow down some. I've not been good at this most of my life, but building some margin in your schedule so that there is time and there's room for interaction. As I said before, Jesus was very busy, but I don't recall ever reading that he was in a hurry. Now, I had the opportunity to practice what I preached the other day. I went to the Garden Center over in Perkinsfield and passed by a staff person, a man that I know from La Fontaine. So, you know, I greeted him and kept on going, got to get those cucumbers in the ground, you know, on a mission. But working on the sermon. So Zacchaeus pops in my head. So I intentionally stopped and I turned around and I, you know, asked him how his little granddaughter was, you know. Remind me how old she is. Remind me of her name, you know. It was the simplest of interactions. It took like, 30 seconds out of my day? But it was imitating Christ, right? At a recent BIC pastors event, the guest speaker was Scott McKnight. You were there. And he's a New Testament scholar and author. And he talked to us about how to nurture a culture of goodness in the church. He said that one of the characteristics of a tov church, that's Hebrew for good, a tov church, is the people-first mentality, following the example of Jesus. He said, people need to know that they are known. Empathy and compassion were the essence of Jesus' ministry. He saw people. He saw the needs of people. He knew the names and the stories, and he reached out to them. How can you and I be Christ-like? Get to know people's names. Get to know their stories. Are there Zacchaeuses around you? Can you ask or remember their names? Can you get to know their stories? Can you be the face of Jesus to them? And can we be part of righting the wrongs of the past by acknowledging the names and the stories of the 215 children who never came home from their residential school? Okay, second takeaway. Emulate Zacchaeus. Stand up. Stand your ground. Refuse to believe that you do not matter or that you are beyond a second chance. Faith over feelings. Embrace your identity as a child of God. Know that God knows you, that he has his eyes on you, he sees you, he knows your name. No matter where you are on your faith journey or what you're going through. Interesting to note that Jesus calls Zacchaeus before Zacchaeus had made any amends, right? You don't have to be cleaned up or even to have made a faith commitment. God sees you and he cares. So I want to close with something written by well-loved theologian Henry Nouwen. In his book called Life of the Beloved, he has this reminder for us. If it will help you to listen, I'll invite you to close your eyes as I read what Nouwen wrote. We are the beloved. We are intimately loved long before our parents, teachers, spouses, children, and friends loved or wounded us. That's the truth of our lives. That's the truth I want you to claim for yourself. That's the truth spoken by the voice that says, you are my beloved. Listening to that voice with great inner attentiveness, I hear at my center God's words that say, I have called you by name from the very beginning. You are mine and I am yours. You are my beloved. On you my favor rests. I have molded you in the depths of the earth and knitted you together in your mother's womb. I have carved you in the palms of my hands and hidden you in the shadow of my embrace. I look at you with infinite tenderness and care for you with a care more intimate than that of a mother for her child. I have counted every hair on your head and guided you at every step. Wherever you go, I go with you, and wherever you rest, I keep watch. I will give you food that will satisfy all your hunger and drink that will quench all your thirst. I will not hide my face from you. You know me as your own, as I know you as my own. You belong to me. Amen.